Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramar Tefio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
Got it.
Ariel?
Good evening and welcome to the Green Egg Radio Hour. I'm Ariel Montserrat.
And I'm Sylvie Salou.
Yeah. And our special guest tonight is Tish Owen. Tish is an author of several books and also the owner-manager of the pagan bookstore Goddess and the Moon in Nashville. And she also founded and runs the Pagan Unity Festival, and I think it was founded 16 years ago, and she's going to be here to talk to us about it tonight, and she's going to tell us who's going to be there. It runs from Thursday, May 16th to Sunday, May 19th, and it's going to be just outside of Nashville, Tennessee. So welcome, Tish.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah,
and you have to excuse my voice. I've been under the weather.
Mhm. Oh no.
Yeah. So, what do you want to you want to tell us who the guests are for this year and what's going to be happening at the festival?
Well, we'll be causing as much trouble as we possibly can, as usual. Oran Zell will be there with us. Dorothy Morrison. M.R. Sellers, Mark Mandrake, Byron Ballard, Nancy Clark, Alex Bledsoe, and Jackie Smith. And Jackie and her sister do Coventry Candles. They produce a line of the Utterly Wicked candles that for Dorothy. Alex Bledsoe writes horror novels, and we thought it would be fun to have him. So,
yeah.
And then Byron Ballard was a guest last year, and she is she does a lot on hoodoo, and she's bringing us Appalachian magic from North Carolina. And Nancy Clark is a local, and so she and Dorothy and Byron are going to do a workshop / ritual late on Saturday night, which ought to be really either really horrifying or really fun. I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah,
on Sunday night. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. And do you have any rituals going on that are going to be happening?
Well, we do. We're going to have, of course, we have an opening ritual on Thursday morning.
Okay.
And then there'll be other rituals. We've got you would ask me that. We've got a Caribbean ritual. We have an Egyptian ritual. I'm not prepared to answer that question, but yes. So really kind of outside the ordinary this year, so it'll be kind of exciting.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Oh, that sounds fabulous. It's a real range of different kinds of rituals, too.
Yeah,
is this the biggest festival in the South? I'm thinking I read that somewhere.
Unless you count Florida.
Well, I don't count Florida as the South, but
okay.
I don't know.
I don't either, but don't tell them because it just hurts their feelings.
Oh, really? Okay.
So
okay.
They think they're the South. Don't tell.
I know. They're not
so, yes,
really.
We
they're
are.
Sort of, they're Florida, you know? It's sort of a place
no,
of
they're
own.
An entity
like,
unto themselves, I'm thinking.
Well, Florida is just spotty with Southern. You know, it's not totally Southern.
Mm-hmm.
It's not totally Southern, but there's a whole lot of pagans and witches and oh my, down there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. This is true.
Yeah.
I live in one of the oh my areas, so.
It's, they're big. Florida Pagan is just, it's just really cool. I've been a speaker at that one. It was awesomely much fun. I enjoyed it.
I have never been there.
Yeah.
but I know there's a lot of pagans.
Oh, my God. You should do a road trip, girl. I'm telling you.
Road trip. Yeah, road trip.
Yeah.
I haven't done a road trip in years. I'm ready.
I'm telling you. Well, they have really, very good accommodations, too, so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're quite a bit less rustic than we are.
Well, now, yours is, do you want to tell people, like, what the venue is, where it's at, and the setting and everything?
Pardon me. So sorry. It's in Montgomery Bell State Park, and we're very fortunate here in Tennessee to have great state parks. And so we are in the group camp, and the group camp was built, it was a work program back in the 30s during the Depression, WPA,
mm-hmm.
and it was built for the Girl Scouts, and so it's about, oh, it's 30-some-odd cabins, and the cabins, most of them have four bunks. They do have electricity, they do have a bunk. They don't have, they have bathhouses. We have bathhouses, not bathrooms. So, you have to kind of hike down the path a little bit to get to the bathroom in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's called camping for a reason.
Really?
And, at least you have a bed with a roof, you know. You have a roof over your head.
Yeah.
But we do have a lot of the cabins. As a matter of fact, I've been sick for the last 4 days, 5 days, and I need to go through the email, make sure I haven't oversold cabins so that I don't have people mad at me.
Cause that's always fun.
You laugh, but it's not funny.
No, I know.
I have a little nervous breakdown, you know, every year to go, oh, my God, have I sold too many cabins? I'm a, you know, what have I done? Go back, you know, painstakingly go back through all the emails and make sure that I'm on top of it. But we also have a huge area to camp for tenting. And so we have tenting. We have people that, you know, sleep in their cars. And we have people that stay in the inn down the street. And we have people that stay at the hotel down the block. And so it just depends on what kind of accommodations. And if, you know, if you want to be rustic and sleep in a tent, you know, come on. We got space for you. So.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have, you know, we've really kind of excited this year because we've really tried to make there be something for everybody. And we think we have lots of stuff for the adults. And now we've got our kids divided into four groups of ages. And we're doing specific events with all of those kids. And we've decided that with the 8 to 12 year olds, we're going to do each one of the pagan holidays, each one of the Sabbaths.
Hmm.
And they're going to either do a craft or an activity for each one, which I think is kind of exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah, it
and
is.
And then we're just going to duct tape the teenagers to trees and be done with them. So.
Yeah. Now, what on earth ever possessed you to decide to do a festival every year?
I think I was drunk.
Oh.
Yeah, see, that explains, you know, it does explain so much, doesn't it? I thought it would just be a great, you know, I'd read about festivals, and I just thought, oh, that would just be so wonderful. Wouldn't it be lovely? And, you know, little pagans playing in the fields and having a ritual together. And, you know, and I was just naive enough to think that, you know, it was doable, and I didn't know that it was impossible, and so I did it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. If you don't know, you can't. Nobody tells you. You can't do it. And that was 16 years ago. And now look at how many there are. There's probably hundreds.
Of festivals.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there is.
Definitely. Definitely. And one of the things I'd like to do for Green Egg is to have a listing every year of at least the major festivals. And I got to get on the stick and do that because, you know, there's a lot of great festivals that you never really hear about if you're not right in that area or part of that local community.
Exactly, exactly. And I think there really are. I kind of, you know, I'm really gratified when I get emails from people saying, we used your book. Our festival is based on your book. Like, oh, it's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
makes me feel good.
That's a great book, by the way. I've read it and reviewed it.
Hey.
And I guess years ago when I first started on Green Egg, it must be 5 years ago or something, but it was just a wonderful book. And, you know, if you ever thought about putting on a festival or even just hosting like a very large party at your place,
yeah.
If you've got a bit of land, you know, you can't possibly think of everything, but or, you know, the average person can't, but they don't have to because they can go out and get your book. And what's the name of the book again, Tish?
It's called Chasing the Rainbow.
That's
it. And the Pagan Pride folks use it as their handbook, which is, I think, very nice.
Oh,
and they tell, you know, the new Pagan Pride, yeah, the new Pagan Pride, oh, we want to do a Pagan Pride. Well, here's the book you need to read. So I just, that just tickles me to death. But, and my publisher, we'll give them a plug, Willow Tree Press, wants me to update it. And so I think I'm going to make another section about staff, what the responsibilities of staff are, because sometimes that's a really hard nut to crack, you know? I mean, what you do is you're going to ask your friends, and then you hate to be like a slave driver, and then they're down at the lake getting drunk, and you're doing all the work. And, you know, it can create some problems. And so you've got to be able to, if you're the person in charge, or if there's a council, or however you're going to organize your festival, you've got to be able to say to people, here's what I expect from you. If you can't do it, don't come.
Mm-hmm.
Come as a guest and pay us money and go from there. So it is you're walking a fine line, and you make mistakes. I will tell you, I'll be the very first to tell you,
mm-hmm.
that I have made some horrible staff mistakes that I paid for dearly. But you know, you kind of live by the idea of, well, you know, you won't have them back next year, and if they really, really screw up, you can send them home before Saturday. If you have to. If it's bad enough, you can say, you know, really, you need to pack your tent and go on. But you have to be willing to do that. And if you're not willing to do that,
mm-hmm.
and you're not willing, you've got to stand your ground with people. I mean, you know, the buck really stops if you're the head knocker. You know, I had a whole carload of people one year, and they were so mad at me because I wouldn't let them bring their dog. And I said, it clearly says on every page of the website.
Yeah.
You can't bring it. Well, you can't, you know, you can't do it. And, you know, I went and got the check. I got their money out of the drawer and handed them back their money.
Was it? But
and,
you also
because I was
have,
no longer willing to argue.
You have
I'm
to
sorry?
Abide by the state park rules, whatever they say.
And by our own insurance. Our insurance doesn't cover
right.
it.
Mm-hmm.
So you know,
well, working
that,
dogs are allowed, aren't they? Like for the blind and things like that.
Well, wait, service dogs. Service dogs. We have we had a guy one year that brought he has seizure disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he brought a dog. And I mean, it was, you know, you can't argue with it. Because I've seen the dog. I've seen how this dog acts with his. It's really kind of cool. But, yeah, you know, you've got a service animals is fine. And service animals are fine. Service animals are a whole different breed apart than, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just
yeah, they're average mooch.
Plain old dogs, yeah. Plain old mutts. So we do allow those. And, but you can't, what if your dog bit a kid? How would you feel? You'd feel terrible.
Exactly, well,
okay.
Yeah.
And it's
you
not
have
a good
to look
environment
at the good of,
bring your... I'm sorry.
You have to look at the good of the numbers of people. If you've got 400 people that you have to take care of, then you have to be careful what you allow to happen.
Yeah. Well, I think that's part of, you know, when you talked a little while ago about you have to be able to basically set boundaries with people. Not everyone's cut out to be a leader, and some people really have a difficult time being able to set boundaries with people.
Right.
And boy, that can just really mess up a whole lot of things when that happens. I've seen that happen. And,
it does happen too.
Yeah. One of the things that I see happen most often in pagan circles, well, probably in other circles too, but especially in pagan circles, we want to be inclusive. We want to be inclusive because, we know people that have gotten kicked out of church, or we've gotten kicked out of church ourselves, and we know what that feels like, you know? And so, like my friends down at Urbs and Ammo, you know, they got he asked the Pentecostal preacher a couple of questions that the preacher couldn't answer, and kicked the whole family out of the congregation. Said, "That's it, you can't come back here." So they went home.
Oh my God!
They went home and they dug into the Bible, and every Saturday they study the Bible, and those people know the Bible like nobody's business. I mean, they got all kinds of reference books and everything. But anyhow. But one of the things that happens, I think, is that people who, let's face it, in every group of people, there's going to be a real stinker. And they're going to be a shit disturber. They're going to be the ones dividing everybody and constantly starting arguments. And, you know, I know we had this at Audubon. And whoever is in charge, all too often, doesn't say anything to that, doesn't do anything about it. And even sometimes, I've been in some groups where about the only thing you could do is ban the person from the group until they decided to add decent to other people.
Yeah, the art of dethroning the queen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, sometimes you just got to do what you got to do, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, it's not an easy job. It's not even a thank. You know, you don't even.
No, nobody thanks you for it. You know, and I've been in positions like that. It's simple, and I was thrust into them. This is usually my luck. I'm not the leader of whatever's going on, but I'm thrust into. Could you get rid of this person?
Yeah.
I'm like, what'd they do? You know.
Yeah, were they? Why? Why would you let me do that?
Hmm.
Yeah, you know, I want to know what's going on. I'm not, you know, that's just the thing. And I don't know why in the world people do that to me, but, you know, a lot of people do not have the skill of dethroning a drama queen. Now, if I'm there and I see what's going on and someone, you know, someone says, would you take care of this? I'll say, sure, I'd be glad to.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah, yeah. But you seem like you'd be
I'm
good
not,
at that.
I'm not afraid
you seem
of confrontation.
Like a good person to be able to do this.
Well, yeah. You know, I'm not afraid of confrontation, and I'm not mean to people unless they get mean with me. But Lord have mercy, you get mean with me, look out. You know, and everybody's the same way. You don't want to provoke someone's anger.
No.
You don't know if they might look at you and you know, they might look at you and go, yeah, you're going to do that. Let's see how you do that with one eye and just poke them in the eye. You know, you never know what type of person you're going to run into.
Well, that's true. I mean, I think we've been very fortunate as far as any kind of confrontations like that. We've just been ridiculously fortunate and maybe just lucky, huh?
Well, let's hope the luck holds out. I think in your area, though, you've got such a spirit about you, Tish, though. You attract some of the sweetest people to you. You really do.
Aw, that's so sweet. Yeah. Thank you.
And that makes me wonder about myself, because I'm wondering, what am I admitting here? You know? Maybe I need
to
say
that. I mean, you know, I've had people from other places say, would you like to come down and, you know, be the mediator for this problem that we're having, which I usually say, oh, I don't want to do that. So, you know, I don't know. And maybe it's just that they recognize you as somebody who will take care of whatever business has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe so, but I'll tell you, so I'm really wary of people and, you know, being thrust into a situation like that to me is dangerous, because you never know, especially with the attitudes in public today, you never know when somebody's going to be a bit psychotic. But I'm just so proud that you have never encountered anything like that. Of course, goodness knows if I were there and somebody were to be like that, I'd be like, all right, I could get rope out of my car here.
Yeah, exactly. I can't even imagine it. I mean, but then I've got good backup. I've got good staff too, and that's important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I can't imagine that anybody would get jiggy with me. I really can't. That because there'd be it would be ugly.
Yeah.
You know? And I wouldn't even have to. And I wouldn't even have to be the one that was ugly. I could just stand there and let somebody else be ugly.
Hmm.
Yeah, this is true.
Yeah. See. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know, but I think that for the most part, people come. We've been doing this 16 years, and so I think for the most part, people come knowing they're going to have a good time. They come to have a good time. They come to play. They come to be happy. They come to run around the woods. They come to go to workshops. I mean, they're coming there to be happy. It's a happy place.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's what we've created. And so I don't think that most people come looking to, you know, looking to start a fire. I mean, or looking to be troublesome, although that has occasionally happened, and we dealt with it, you know, and took care of it. And,
well,
you know, there's
one
a lot
thing
of people
I've...
that are... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Well, there's one thing I've noticed about, you know, some of the places where things, ugly things happen and some of the places where ugly things don't happen. Usually when ugly things happen, there's alcohol involved, you know.
Good point.
Well, yeah, and lots of it. And, I mean, you know, I mean, we do have alcohol, and but you don't see anybody. You've been there. You don't see people just stupid, drunk, falling down. You just don't see it.
Right.
So,
and
I think that
lends to leadership, which is from you, where you expect responsibility. You expect people to take responsibility for themselves, and people want to. And I love that, the want to out of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well,
and
I think that everybody wants to be part of the party, and nobody wants to. You know, nobody wants to be putting time out. You know, we don't have a lot of people that have been banned, but we got a couple, and they just can't come back.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and
what that tells me is you're taking care of business, and you're keeping the whole event, you're making it a safe place for people to go to. You know, and
we really try. We really, really do try for it to be safe. I mean, we've got more kids this year. We've got them divided up. We've got 3 to 7, 8 to 12. We have the, and they're going to hate it, but we have the 13s to 15s, and then we have the 16s and up, you know, because I don't particularly think that 13-year-olds need to be hanging out in a group when there's 18-year-olds. I just don't think there should be.
No, they're different.
So, yeah, we've got, well, you know, kids are, you know, you were a kid. God knows what, I know I've gotten all kinds of, you know, trouble. And if you watch them close enough, they might not get in too much trouble. But, you know, they're out there, and we want them to be safe, and don't want anybody to hurt them, and we don't want them to hurt each other. And, you know, you just have to, I don't want to say ride herd, but you kind of do have to ride herd. And, you know, we don't have the guardians. Like, some of the bigger festivals have the guardians. And they actually come, and they're the security, and so they take care of business, and they're pretty serious about it. But and I think we're too laid back for the guardians. I think we're too loose for them. I don't know. I think they would look at our setup and go, "Are you people crazy? How do you do it this way? Because, you know, we're on the radio being stupid and telling jokes, you know, and for the, you know, instead of the radio is just for business." No, it's for us to be able to screw around on because we think it's funny. So,
Well, now you mentioned.
Well, it.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, you go ahead.
I forgot what I was going to say. Good heavens! Anyway, you mentioned the teenagers, and I'm wondering, do you have any particular programs for the young people and or for the children?
Oh yeah. The people that are in charge of people that are in charge of the teenagers. They've got all kinds of, there's going to be workshops and classes, but they can go to any of the classes that they want to, you know. But we've got some specific things for them. But one of the things I really love is my son helps them make swords out of foam, and then they get out there and beat each other with swords. They think that's, like, the greatest thing ever. So, I don't know.
Sounds like something I'd like to do.
I know, they love it. So he has ended up doing it with all the groups because they all want to fight with swords. It's the funniest thing ever. And so they like to do that, but they're going to do, you know, they're going to teach them some tarot, and they're going to teach them some divination. They're going to get some henna. So, you know, they've got a fair good number of things. And then one of the, hopefully we're going to have somebody that will take them on a nature walk and help them learn to identify plants.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
Because we actually had teenagers ask for that. And then the other thing is the teens and the tweens are responsible for lunch. That's their contribution to festivals,
mm-hmm.
is that they are on the, you know, they're on the line in the kitchen, and they make the sandwiches, and they distribute the lunch to people that come in that have bought lunch tickets.
Mm-hmm.
So that's their contribution, and they work on Thursday and Friday and Saturday and come and do lunch, and they give about an hour and a half of their time to make sure all the sandwiches are made, and they have adult supervision, but they're the ones on the line making sure that there's cookies and chips and whatever in the bag, and
mm-hmm.
people get the right kind of sandwich, and they like it. They like feeling like they're a part, they're contributing to the festival.
Exactly, and it makes them feel important. They're doing something, you know, they're being part of the community, and they're doing something that helps the community. And it's,
yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and that's really important for kids, too, you know, even little kids. So now what about for the small children? Do you have child care or anything like that?
Yeah, we have, they're all broken up into different age groups, and they're all broken up, into different groups. And so the little bitty ones, you know, we just call it the eat paste. We let them color, and we have a slip and slide, so they can play in the slip and slide. So, but basically, you know, they're going to just play and color and do crafts, and then the 8 to 12s they're going to do the holidays, an activity for each one of the holidays, and then the tweens, I just got this really brilliant idea. It's mostly girls.
Mm-hmm.
There's some of the great activities ever are in the Girl Scout handbook for badges.
Oh yeah.
So I sent for one. I ordered one, and the person who's in charge of that particular group, which is Kat Jones, and she and I are going to sit down and pick out some activities for them. And she's going to take them shopping, and they're going to do nails, and they're going to do girl stuff, and you know, they're going to. So they all have their own area to hang out into.
Yeah.
The teenagers are going to have a dance on Friday night, like a prom.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's going to be cool, I think. Yeah, I think that's going to be really cool. So they're all going to get dressed up, and they're going to have, you know, everybody's going to, we've told them to bring whatever instrument, you know, whatever iPod, iPad, whatever, that you have music download on, bring your music that you like. We'll have speakers, and we just plug up their stuff and, you know, play their music, and they can dance or hang out or do whatever. So.
Yeah.
But they're kind of excited about
that's
that. They're already talking about what they're gonna wear.
Oh,
they're excited. Yeah.
They are excited. I like the enthusiasm I'm seeing from the teenagers, because usually they're very jaded. They're like, oh, you know.
Yeah,
so beneath us. So I was happy to see that they got excited over the dancing. I know. It's really hard with them. It's like, God, you can't get it right. Because they're teenagers, you know.
Yeah.
Well, now
and
that's going
to
be a sight to see.
Oh, yeah. The little kids, if you take them out in the yard and you give them all bottles of bubbles, they're happy, you know. They're easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
The bigger ones are not so.
Let's see. So now what, do you still need some volunteers? I mean, if people are listening in and they're planning on going, such as Sylvie and myself, what kind of help do you need?
We always gang press people as they come in the front gate, and we ask people to give us about an hour and a half, hour and 15 minutes. A class block, if they would give us a class block of time to for the specific things that we've got going on. And, you know, that's kitchen prep, it's picking up garbage, it's, you know, making sure there's toilet paper in the bathrooms, and, you know, none of the jobs are terribly hard. But they're all vital, and we couldn't do it. We have a staff of 33. We could not do a festival the size of Puff unless we had people to help us. You can't do it.
Yeah.
It's just too much. And so I think we're okay as far as our straight-up staff volunteers. But, yeah, we ask everybody to help us, except the merchants. The merchants, they get a buyout. They contribute something to the to the raffle, and which usually goes to somebody who needs it. some you know, Pagan in Need, and but we also are going to try and raise money because we have we filled out the paperwork to be an Aquarian Tabernacle satellite church, and we're trying to we think we'd like to try and, you know, stockpile some money, and maybe you know, wouldn't it be nice eventually after 16 years, wouldn't it be nice to own our own piece of land? And you know, that's
yeah,
kind of a way off sort of idea, but it would be nice, and it's, I think we're going to try and get that started this year.
Oh, really?
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Just start to save the money. You know, we're we'll be a 501 C3, and so you know, if we do a raffle and we make a nice little chunk of change, that'll go, you know, put it in the box under the bed and hang on to it until we see. I mean, who knows what could happen?
Yeah.
That's a fabulous idea.
Wouldn't it be fabulous? It would be fabulous. So
I think that's probably, you know, every pagan's dream is to own a little bit of land. Well, most pagans dream, maybe. I guess some are hopelessly stuck in the city. But I know that that was mine for many, many years, years and years and years, and finally we got our land, you know.
Yeah, yeah. You've got your land, so.
Mm-hmm. It's different. When you own your own land, it's different. It really is. I mean, it's like you become wedded to the land. And the other day, Tom and I were at a very low point. We have had snow here like almost every day for the last, I don't know, week and a half or something. And right now it's supposed to be spring, and it isn't. It's still winter. And so we were in the winter.
Yeah.
And we said, well, you know, I don't know. Maybe we need to, you know, move somewhere else or do something different or whatever. And then I realized, no, I can't leave here. I'd miss my bald eagle. I'd miss the hawk pair that we have.
Oh, God, yes.
I'd miss the fabulous view of the Clinch Mountains. We see like half the sky, and we've got this incredible view, and our woods, and, you know, just things like that. You just, there's like a pattern to living here. I mean, I know that every year when I go out in the garden and begin to garden, I'm going to see my little toad friends. They always come out and greet me.
Right.
Little things like that, you know, and spring is just amazing here because everything is getting into spring. I mean, all the birds are doing their mating dances. Doves are literally billing and cooing. You see the butterflies doing their mating dance together. It's just amazing. It's nonstop, and it's like living in paradise. That's about what I would call it. But yeah, owning your own land. It's very special, and it's, we feel like we don't feel like we own the land. We feel like we're the stewards of the land. That's, you know.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Mhm.
It is. So I'm, you know, when you owning land's a big responsibility, and
mm-hmm.
you know, I've talked to Tish about this before, but you know, I've told her, I said I would love to see the Pagan Unity Festival have its own spot of ground.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Okay,
yeah.
I'm all for it.
I told her, I said, I wish that I were a millionaire because I just take her out and go, look, what do you want? Where do you want your land?
Yeah.
Let's go pick out some land. I'd do it in a heartbeat.
Let's go get us some. That would be all right.
Let's get the road, the show on the road.
Well, yeah,
I mean, it would be. It'd be, you know, and you think about all the things you could do and how you would do it, and you know, I'm a huge fan of cob buildings, and you know, cob buildings are cheap to build, and they
beautiful, yeah,
catch on fire, and they you can make them whatever size you want, and you can build a fireplace into them, and
yeah,
you know, they just are
they're wonderful,
brilliant for,
mm-hmm.
for what we're talking
yeah.
about, and so.
Yeah.
You know, the cool in the summer, warm in the winter. You know, and that'd be my preference, is to, you know, find somebody who could teach us how to do that. Which, and we've got the farm right down here in Summertown. Well, not right down here; it's about 2 hours away. But one of the things that they did for a long time was they had cob building class, where you could come and take a class and spend a week at the farm and learn how to build it, how to make cob and how to build a building.
Yeah, yeah.
What are they built out of, cob buildings?
It's mud and straw and sand and water.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I know how to build a fence like that, but I've never tried a building.
Well, and they last forever, too.
Yeah.
There's 800-year-old cob buildings in England.
Yeah, in Ireland as well. Yeah, they last forever once you got them built. Yeah, we thought about that when we first moved here was to build some cob houses. And then we quickly realized that, you know, we're not exactly spring chickens, and so it hasn't happened yet.
Yes.
I don't know.
We must find young minions to do this.
Yes.
Yeah.
But there's plenty of them out there.
Yeah.
Well, send them all over.
They would think it would be
help.
Fun. They would think it would be great fun to do that. So.
Yeah. But, you know, people don't realize you live on land, and it's a lot of work, okay? And for just one example, last August we had the mother of all rainstorms. It rained, and it rained, and it rained just about every day for about 6 weeks straight. I am not exaggerating. And we had a huge old oak, 2 feet in diameter. It just rotted in the middle. That was all there was to it.
Wow.
And it fell down across our road. This ginormous tree, I mean 2 feet diameter oak tree, hardwood. And so Tom and I get in the car to go run out and do some shopping. Lo and behold, we can't go anywhere because this tree is completely against blocking everything. And on top of that, there's about two or three other trees that have fallen down right in the same place. It took Tom 3 entire days of chainsawing to chop it up enough just so we could get through. And then he's still never recovered from it. He's got it kicked up horrible arthritis and a hernia, and I can't remember what all.
Awful.
So that's just one thing that happens, you know.
Yeah, so. you got it. This tells you why people always had a large family when they were working on farm.
Yeah,
you know, because you need help when you're building things and.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for the festival and the church and things like that, as many people as you have coming to teach workshops, I am sure that there would be plenty of people who have the skills that would be glad to come in and teach people. You could even have some of them built as a project for, you know, as a workshop project.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's what I think, too. I certainly think that you could do that. We'll teach y'all how to build a cob house the weekend of Puff.
Well, yeah.
Actually, I don't think you can do that fast because you have to build them like the blocks. It's either 3 or 4 high, and then you have to leave them to dry because if you build them any higher than that, they'll cave in on each other.
Because
they're still, you know, they're not wet, but they're not dry.
Right.
You know, they're like clay. And
right.
So they have to be, they have to dry. So we could get something done.
Well, you know, with your own land though, you don't have a limit on your days. You could actually throughout the year you could. Well, we're going to have a workshop. For as long as it takes, you know, and because you know skills like that to me are important for people to learn.
Mm-hmm.
We're so used to the electricity, all the modern things, and it's an experience to get in there and learn something and get into it with your own hands, and it's such a sense of accomplishment when it's done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some people kind of snub their nose at it because they're like, I don't want to work that hard, and yes, it's hard work, but you sleep at night, and when you lay down. You have this sense of accomplishment. You're looking at something. You're going, I helped to do that.
Yeah.
Right. I helped to do that, and that's. I think it's really important to feel like you've made that contribution. And so I love the idea of, you know, having a piece of land where we really could build the buildings, and people really could come and make their contributions and be able to look at it and say, I did that.
Mm-hmm.
I helped build that. I just think that's incredibly important.
We have that up at Onovan at Church of All Worlds out in California, which has been there for 40 years. And you go all through the land. It's 55 acres. It used to be a lot more, but it's 55 acres now. And you go through and you see a stone circle somebody built. You see the bird bath somebody donated. Our very dear friend Eldry, who's an amazing artist, did a whole staircase of, you know, instead of a stair railing, she got like macrame type string or rope, and she did it, the whole thing. She wove all of it so that it was like a giant spider web. Amazing. The beautiful signs people have made, you know. And then, of course, the temple is just really amazing. But and so there's 40 years of history there, 40 years of people donating.
Exactly.
An apple tree for the garden. Somebody did incredible stained glass for the temple building. And you have a sense of pride, but also a sense of, this is where I belong. My roots are here, you know? And putting down roots. I never really had much of roots. The longest I ever lived anywhere was for about 10 years. This is my entire life. And that was once. The rest of the time, I never was in a place more than 3 years. Well, I've been here 8 years now. And that's an accomplishment right there.
Absolutely. It gives the pagan community, that would give the pagan community a sense of family for those who don't have that.
And a sense of history. We need to create some history for ourselves.
Yeah.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. Yeah, we're in a strange way, you know, because we're the oldest of religions, but yet we don't have a history. It was pretty much wiped out.
Exactly. And we don't have any places. We need places.
Yeah.
Physical, geographic places, yes. And so I think that's incredibly important. You know, one of the people doing that is Christopher Pinzak, and he's created Temple.
Yeah.
And is doing the work, and, you know, he's got community behind him. I'm just so ridiculously proud of him. He's making it happen.
Oh, he's amazing. I just love him. He's just amazing.
Yeah.
You know,
he's
just realized we need to play, we need to take a little break and play our song. And if anybody wants to call in and they've got a question, suggestion, or whatever, please call us at 718-664-6436, and the phone lines are open now.
Got it. Of transformation and fire.
Transformation
inspired. My inner passion was courage.
And that was Kellyanne and the song Pele, for those who wonder who sings it and what the name of the song is.
Yeah.
And
I
might
had,
add, that
it
song.
Was catchy.
That
I think
song
we had a little bit of a technical difficulty for a minute there, so.
And we got through it. That song reminds me of you, Tish. It does.
Okay, why?
You didn't hear the words to that? The
well,
fire of transformation lights my passion within. Yes, ma'am.
One thing I wanted to ask you, Tish, is how did you come to paganism?
Nothing else seemed to work.
I hear that one.
You know, well, I mean, I wonder how any of us come here. Started out in Catholicism, raised in it, went to Catholic school, and got married and got divorced. And, boy, I was a pariah. You know, when I divorced,
wow.
There were not divorced Catholic people.
Right.
And so it was difficult, and we were definitely treated differently.
Aww.
Because of the divorce, yeah, it was not pleasant,
yeah.
And I started looking as my kids got a little older, and I became more and more disenchanted and disenfranchised. I started looking at other things and looked at, you know, on weekends when the kids were at their dad's, I could go out and explore things. And none of the Protestant religions worked for me. The Buddhists were very nice, but it just wasn't my bag, and.
Mm-hmm.
I promise you that I was standing in a bookstore and I saw this ad on the billboard, on the bulletin board that said, roommate needed, it would be great if they were Wiccan. And I thought, what does that mean? What is that word? And I started exploring what that word meant. And, you know, that's been 20-odd years ago. And then I met a man, how funny how things happen, that who was definitely pagan. And so it was nice to have somebody to be able to explore with, and to not have not have to worry about whether he thought I was crazy because, you know, I was looking at Wicca and paganism in general, and so and it just kind of grown from there. And I still can't I haven't done anything that I like any better.
Yeah,
it's been a long journey and quite a satisfactory one.
So,
yeah.
Can I ask how long you've been pagan?
About 22 years.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's a good amount of time.
Well, I mean, I came to it late. You know, I was 40 years old before I started, you know, making that exploration. So,
yeah.
I came to it late. You know, we have...
You wouldn't know it, though.
I think we're born pagan. I really do.
Yeah.
I think we're born pagan. And when you talk to people and you find out what their background is, and it's like, how the hell did you even find this religion? You know?
I
was 43 before I ever learned that there was this religion out there, you know, this whole other reality that I knew nothing about. And boy, was
well,
there
that,
a whole
that's
other
me.
Reality. Yeah.
Yeah, that's me too, because I was, well, it was my late 30s and before I realized that I've always been pagan, you know.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Yeah.
Who knew? Yeah, when you ask a pagan who's been around for at least a couple of years, you know, that's always the answer is, well, when did you become pagan? Well, I think I've always been pagan, you know. It's something
right.
Like,
you just kind of went, oh, is that what I am? Oh.
Mm-hmm. It was real nice to know what I was, you know. It was. I finally found my tribe. I finally found my family. I never really. I had a family, but it never felt like a family. I mean,
exactly.
We were so far. I mean, my parents were like to the right of the John Birch Society, and I'm about as liberal as
wow.
It gets. You know, polyamorous and social nudist and all of that. And you can see there might have been one or two problems there.
there might have been. Yeah, I didn't know what the John Birch Society was, and we were at a some kind of a festival. It was in Texas. This was years ago. And they had a booth. And they had all this, you know, paraphernalia they were handing out, propaganda. And, of course, you know, you're walking along and you're collecting whatever people are handing out. And I got home, and I started reading it, and I thought, holy cats, these are some scary guys. And they were at the fair, you know?
Yeah.
Along with people who make who were making strawberry jelly. Yeah, they scared me to death.
Yeah, I hear you. Not exactly where you expect them to be hanging out. They're a Southern California thing, I think, is where they came out of.
I don't know. This was Texas, and they were kind of scary. So you know, hanging out with the quilts and the strawberry jelly, and they're there. So, I don't know. It's just funny. I don't know if it's
funny
or not.
That's
kind of
funny that. Well, it is funny in a way because quilting is actually a pagan. I mean, look at what Dorothy Morrison produces.
Oh, my gosh, she does produce some cool things.
Beautiful, beautiful quilts and the patterns she uses. Well, the first time I seen them, I thought, she is old magic.
Yeah.
That was the first thing I thought. Because quilting is actually a form of magic that's been around forever.
Yeah. That's
and
true.
And this Birch Society is surrounded by quilts. Who do they think they're going to fool for long? Really?
I don't know, but it's, you know, me until I got home and read it, and I was like, oh, thank you very much. You know, I got home and read it. Holy cats! I don't want to go back wherever those people are. I want to be somewhere else.
You got home and you recognized it. I mean, hey.
Yeah.
I know it scared me kind of, you know, stupid.
Because,
the
world needs
young,
more bigotry and hatred, right? Jeez.
Exactly. Young and impressionable. I should have been young and impressionable. It didn't impress me that much. It scared me to death. So anything that's that, you know, repressive. You know, so very funny when you think about it. Cause, so here we are, you know. Is about as unrepressive as we can possibly be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well,
we're getting
down to about the last 4 minutes of the show. So Tish, if you wouldn't care, let everyone know what the website address is for the Pagan Unity Festival, so that they can go there and find out how to buy their tickets and just cruise the website and learn all about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's really simple. It's www.paganunityfestival.org because we're an organization. And you can please remember that it is a work in progress and be kind to me. Don't be harsh about how not good it is. It does the job mostly. But we've had some issues with the website. So we're just now working on the schedule and trying to get the classes in so that people will know what days, you know, specific classes are taking place. And so we're working on that. That is a work in progress. And then I just spent the last, you know, 4 days and 5 days in bed. So it kind of, you know, puts behind a little bit.
Yeah.
And do you have a telephone number people can call if they should need to?
I do. Thank you. 615-414-1325, and we can answer hopefully whatever questions you might have. We'll certainly try, and if we don't know the answer, we'll find somebody that does.
Yeah, well,
absolutely.
And also I'd like to add that Sylvie and I will both be there. There will be a Green
I'm
Egg.
I'm so
present.
Excited.
Yeah, me too. But anyway, there'll be a Green Egg presence there, and you can look for us. If you find Oberon Zell Ravenheart's table, we'll probably be sharing a table with him, and so
a space with him, and you're gonna do sort of a workshop, sort of.
Yeah, well, actually,
ritual,
you know, we've been trying to figure out what the it's actually a ritual, and it's called the Council of All Beings, and we have a circle of people, and everybody goes into a sort of meditation. And listens for what animal will be calling to them that they will be an oracle for. So, in other words, we're going to be hearing from maybe Wolf. Horse has already reached out and grabbed me and said, slammed me against the wall and said, look, sister, you got to talk about horses, okay? And all life forms, plants, whatever, redwood trees. And we will be, the circle will be the oracle for these beings to come forth and tell us what their experience of life on this planet is like for them right now. Considering that we're under so much, we're under assault from all kinds of stuff, pollution, climate change, and everything. Right now, and this has been going on for a couple of years, every 7 minutes, another species becomes extinct. Think about that. So that's why we're doing this, and it's very, very powerful. The process was created by Joanna Macy, if anybody knows about her. She travels mostly in Buddhist circles, I think, these days, but it's just a really brilliant ritual. So that's what we'll be doing, and I guess probably, what, Saturday night? Is that what we'll be doing?
I think it is Saturday night. We've got a cabin that's set down the way for, away from as much as possible. The noise, the madding crowd. And we have Yes Fireplace, which you may or may not, I thought that might be a nice addition.
Yeah.
And we're ready for you.
Oh, wonderful. We're thrilled. We're thrilled. So,
yeah. Well, folks, that's the end of the show. And y'all be sure and come on out to the Pagan Unity Festival. You will not regret it.
Yeah.
Y'all come on down.
Okay. Thanks for being on the show,
girls. I'll see you in May.
Okay.
All righty.
Good night,
everybody.
Bye-bye. Good night, Tom and Aubrey, wherever you are.
Okay, I just did an hour commercial for the festival.
No good,
that is. Yeah, that's a great...
I'm in.
You're listening to Aramarte Feo on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
Hey, welcome everyone to Screen the News. This is Rick Wilson, and I'm joined today by my esteemed guest, Evan Batterton. How are you doing, Evan?
I'm great, Rick. How are you doing tonight?
Doing really good, brother. Thanks for asking. So everyone knows, tonight's topic will be the new pope. And who cares? I care. Evan cares, obviously, and that's why we're having this discussion. For those that don't know, a new pope was appointed within this last month, and... we feel that there's some significance on, many things of why he was appointed and what that means going forward. Evan has written extensively about this. You can reach Evan at evanbatterton.wordpress.com. That's evanbatterton.wordpress.com. You can see some of his blogs there about the new pope. What his views are, and you can also reach me at Scream the News on Facebook. So, Evan, I know that, there were, what's your blog, and with all the new appointment of the Pope, a lot of things we want to get to. I don't know where you want to begin, but maybe just describe for folks, what's your background in Catholicism?
Well, you know, first I want to say anybody that doesn't care about the new pope should. For one, he is an important head of state. I think there were some, well, there was over 100 representatives of heads of state at his inauguration mass, Joe Biden included, the very own vice president. And the only reason that President Obama did not attend was because he was in Israel. So, I mean, this guy's important. He always has been. So everybody should care. Everybody should care. He's what a lot of people would call a mover and a shaker. As far as my background in Catholicism goes is, I was raised Catholic. And, not only raised Catholic, but I was put through a Catholic grade school. And then I was put through a Catholic high school. Jesuit owned and educated, as a matter of fact. And had I chosen to go on to a university here in Missouri, which is where I'm from, and I currently reside in St. Louis, St. Louis University, one of the most well-respected universities in the entire country, was at least, headed up by a Jesuit priest. So it's important to know that, and the reason I say Jesuit is because our new pope is, of course, the first Jesuit pope.
For those of us that are more laymen, so to speak, what is, because I know that you're referring to the term Jesuit, what does that mean?
The Jesuits were started a long, long time ago. They've been nicknamed the Marines of God, and basically they were an order put together to put down anybody that opposed the Catholic Church by any means necessary. And it was preordained by the Pope. It was one of those things like in the Crusades, like you do whatever you need to do, and I will absolve you of your sins. And St. Ignatius Loyola, or Ignatius Loyola, if you don't want to recognize his sainthood, I don't personally anymore. He was the founder, and his co-founder was St. Francis Xavier. These guys were really, really hardcore people. They were really hardcore people, and their number one job was to put down. And sometimes put down means just what your veterinarian would tell you with your 17-year-old dog. You put something down. They were killers. They had no qualms about killing. It was one of their vows. And we'll get to the vows a little. We're going to get to a section of the vows a little bit later, something that's extremely barbaric that these guys swear in.
Francis Xavier. Now, what's the difference, Francis Xavier versus Francis Assisi? How does that come into play?
Well, the main thing that I connect with is in a lot of us in fringe politics, because I don't like to use conspiracy theorists. I think it's derogatory, but I think it's pretty much a given that the Vatican, along with the banking system and politicians, are considered what we would call the Illuminati or the New World Order, the people that pull the strings. And the day that he was picked, when the white smoke blew from the conclave, they went on and on and on about Saint Francis of Assisi. He was a significant figure in Catholic history. He's the patron saint of ecology, of animals. He came from a wealthy family. There's just so much to say about him. I think the most important thing is his name, probably, as we'll find out later on, when we start talking about the prophecy of Malachi. And also just a fun fact, St. Francis of Assisi, according to the Catholic Church, was also the very first individual to undergo what is called stigmata, which is spontaneously experiencing some or all of the wounds of Jesus Christ, holes in the hands, feet, crown of thorns on the head, blood coming for no apparent reason, blood coming from the side for no apparent reason. He was also the patron saint of Italy. I don't know if that is something that is important to mention here, especially with the prophecy, but he was a very busy man. And the reason that the mainstream media equated these two and said there were so many similarities between the two of them was because this new Pope Francis is being looked at as the people's pope. In fact, they called him that today on corporate media. This is the people's pope.
Well,
and,
let me say that too. Just, and I want you to continue. Just as I said, I'm not as familiar, you know, with the papal prophecies and religion in general. But when you say people's pope, what I've seen on mainstream media basically is they're really driving home the fact that he takes the bus
right
to places,
right,
things like that, trying to make him, which of course, you know, you and I both. Kind of question everything, like with a grain of salt. Why is something being presented this way? Maybe he is. Maybe he is all for the poor and the meek, and you know, our views of past popes and the Vatican. I don't believe that the Vatican and the past popes really cared too much about the poor, just because of everything that they're, you know, draped in gold and robes and the halls that they have.
Well, sure. Anything that they've ever done is philanthropy. Anything, and that's in my opinion, anything that they've ever done is philanthropy.
So is this new pope really the people's pope then? Is he, you know, really a good guy, do you think? Or should we take
it with a grain of salt? I don't think so at all.
Yeah.
You gotta look at this guy's background, and you know, and I'll get into that, you know, later on, maybe in another interview or in another blog, but you know, there were some definite human rights violations that were happening in Argentina that he refused to get involved in. There was a kidnapping scandal with two Jesuit priests. They were kidnapped for 5 months, and they were found. And, you know, he denied anything to do with it. But, you know, the bottom line is he can take the bus, and he can have an apartment, and he can do all these things. But I'm pretty sure he could walk into any bar on the entire face of this earth and say, I'm the Pope, and somebody's going to buy him a drink. I don't think that he has to ever hurt for the rest of his life. I think he knows that, and I know that, and you know that, and everybody knows that. He is now considered a head of state, to which all heads of state honor him. I mean, in February, there was the inauguration of the South Korean president. Did you hear anything about that on the news?
I did not.
No, but we have a new pope elected, and we've heard about him every day on TV today, which it's, you know, it's Thursday, and this is considered Holy Week in Catholicism. Tomorrow would be the celebration of the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, but today, normally, he would be washing the feet of, you know, priests and cardinals to symbolize what Christ did at the Last Supper when he went around, even though he was Lord. Over his apostles, he showed how humble he was and how he was there. It was symbolic to serve mankind by washing the feet of his apostles, of his followers. And that's very symbolic of those times, too. I mean, for somebody to wash someone else's feet in Roman culture, even in the culture of Judaism, that's absolutely huge. But today, instead of washing the feet of priests, and, you know, cardinals or anybody else, he washed the feet of prisoners. And this is all making him look really, really good. They're really singing this guy's praises on mainstream media big time, just really, really big time. And just to backtrack a little bit, to get back between the difference between Francis of Assisi and St. Francis of Xavier, St. Francis of Xavier was the, you know, he was the co-founder of the Jesuit order. He was with St. Ignatius Ayola, and there's been a lot of debate on whose name he actually took, because he hasn't been clear on that. There's been no official statement from the Vatican or from him, are you taking Xavier's or Assisi's? And the bottom line is he can take both if he wanted to. That's what Benedict did. When they asked him,
I'm curious about that too. His name really isn't Francis. He takes on that name. So is that what you're alluding to? That is it something like he takes a papal name under the understanding that he will be sort of alluding to a previous one and doing that sort of same work that person did before.
Media was trying to paint for us. That's what they were trying to paint for us with taking the bus and living in a modest apartment and things like that, and that he really lead the poverty lifestyle that priests are sworn to take. All priests take an oath of poverty. You and I both know that, what they say, that cross on Pope Benedict's neck was worth 80,000 euros, something like that. And the bus and all that's really well and good and everything, but the fact is he's still running a several hundred million dollar business. Billions.
Well, and I want to interject there too, Evan, because I think we both are taking with a grain of salt. And when we're doing this, we're very both, I'd say, critical thinkers, where maybe he is, even in his own right, in his own mind, thinking he's doing a good thing. I will, as one extreme, I will consider that. But yeah, if he's running on an empire, you said a couple hundred million, I'd say it's more in the billions, but that's a different debate. So what's the difference now between, what does that matter? Because in my mind, the Vatican and all popes before him, just there was so much opulence. What did they really accomplish? And knowing that the last pope, there was a little bit of inconsistency with why he, retired. The first one ever to actually quit, I guess.
And that was very odd that he did that. That was extremely odd, because I think the last time that happened was in 1044. So I don't know the exact date, but it was really odd. And I know that you and I both saw on social media and things like that, it had to do with the banking scandal and had to do with an Italian warrant for his arrest. And, I think that's a lot of hogwash. And I'm going to tell you why, because nobody's going to lock the Pope up. Okay, it's just not going to happen. I can't tell you why. I can't give you any judicial reasons why, but, it's the same thing that happened with Nixon. I mean, he was indicted, and he was arrested, and he was pardoned. I mean, he never saw a day in jail. And it's the same thing. Nobody's going to arrest the Pope. It's just not going to happen.
Well, and I think that's a great point for people that don't know. The Vatican is one of three, I believe it's D.C., London, and then the Vatican. The Vatican itself is its own entity. So their laws are not – they go by different laws than the rest of the world does.
Right.
Is that fair to say?
And that's kind of interesting too. The Vatican actually has one of the worst crime problems in the entire world. And I don't mean by violent crimes. I mean just, all the tourists there. It's just there's a ton of thievery with pickpockets and things like that. And what the Vatican normally does is, and they have some sort of shared agreement with Italy, is they just sort of usher people across the border to Italy and let them handle the crime. And it's usually, the same thing it would be here, a pickpocket thing, is, city municipal chicken shit. Really, that's all that it amounts to. But that's what they sort of usher in. I'm saying that he's not going to be arrested for the same reason that the bankers are not going to be arrested here in the United States or anywhere else, except, maybe the exception of Iceland, because it's one of those too big to fail kind of things. It's just not
going to happen. And going along with that, I mean, the amount of followers that the Pope has and the Vatican has.
1.2 billion.
So if he's accused of something, and we've talked about this before, if someone's going to be worshiping, their idol, he probably is infallible. It doesn't matter what he would do in most people's minds that are following him. He automatically either didn't do it or he's automatically forgiven.
Well, that's an interesting word, though, that you used, Rick, and I don't think you realized it. Infallible. Infallible. That's an interesting word because I can't remember what council it was, and I think maybe it was Pope Gregory that said it, but there is something
council
called papal infallibility. Yeah, there's,
right.
You have papal infallibility, which means they are
right.
Perfect, and what they say goes. because they consider themselves the vicar of Christ, which biblically that's wrong. Biblically, I believe the vicar of Christ is the Holy Spirit, but you know what they've done is they've become the modern day Pharisees, and they have in for a long time until, and this is why the Jesuits came into being for a long time. You know, they told people you don't have the knowledge, you're not capable of understanding the complexities.
So what's a Pharisee, Evan? What's a Pharisee? Is that
Pharisee goes all the way back to, you know, the reason Christ was crucified. This is a Jewish Zionist type thing. A Pharisee, they were the priests of their day, the cardinals of their day, and they used their advanced knowledge of the Torah and other Jewish holy books to maintain power over the people and over the poor, and to basically keep them subjected. The same way the priests have in the Catholic Church for a long time until Martin Luther came around and began the Protestant Reformation. And what's interesting is it's what the Catholic Church did is so unchristian. It's not even funny, because one of the things that Jesus Christ did when he was on earth, and people can talk about whether or not he's divine or whether or not he existed. You know, my thing about it is, you know, if I walk out of my house and I come back in my house and my walls were white but they were painted red, I know somebody was in my house and painted it red, even though I don't have proof. You know, so I can't really think that all these stories and this movement of Christianity was from an extrapolation of beliefs that was simply made up to be a man. I'm sorry, it's just unfathomable
for
me.
For someone just from my background, I even hate using the word religious because I think I'm more spiritual, but I think I would tend to agree. It's not that, you know, it's not that Jesus didn't exist, and if he didn't, then so be it. But I would also kind of find it very unbelievable that this person did not exist just because of all the stories. My issue is, and I don't want to tangent there too much because it's kind of getting off topic, but or perhaps not, is that a lot of the writings that go into the Bible, a lot of the interpretations that everyone is discussing, let's say he does exist and did exist, is man's own allegory and interpretation, and what's included in the Bible and what isn't, and what he was capable of and what isn't. That's probably another 2 hours for a different discussion.
Right.
But I'm glad you
brought that up. Well, you know, my main point, though, was is that he taught that you do not need these people. Okay, you do not need these Pharisees. You can have a direct link with God, which is in the very essence of spirituality. I mean, I think you'd agree with that. That you do not need, you don't need to go to people. They're just men, okay? And this guy is just a man also. But for whatever reason, he is, you know, he's the king of Catholics. He is, because of his papal infallibility. So it wouldn't matter, like I said earlier, about Pope Benedict being arrested. It's not ever going to happen because it's not going to deter any Catholics. I mean, the child abuse scandals, that definitely did. That definitely hurt the church. But this guy and the way they're portraying him, he is doing a very good job of cleaning things up.
Okay, which leads me to believe this. He's the guy, the people's pope, as you said it, and this is what the mainstream media is shoving down our throats. And as
they
shoved
it down our throats before the white smoke even came. They were talking about a reformation before it even came.
Exactly. So knowing that, and again, as I said before, I'm willing to go there as one extreme possibility. Yes, he is the savior of all, and everything is going to be happy. But I think we both... let's get to the juicy stuff here. Now, him being the last pope, and when I say this, I want to get into this now because, you know, we've only got another 38 minutes or so.
Right.
The Malachi prophecy, and even beyond that, what's so different and so important about this new pope? Because my understanding is he could be the last one.
Yes, that's the last
pope. So could for folks that don't know, I'm kind of jumping way ahead. When we're talking about prophecy and so forth, why is this pope, why does it matter? Why are we even talking about this right now? It is because not only of the Malachi, is it Malachi or Malachi?
Malachi.
Malachi prophecy. But in why his name is important and things that are going on around the globe. Can you explain to folks, first of all, what is the Malachi prophecy? So why is this pope, in that respect, an important figure?
Well, Malachi was an Irish archbishop, and it happened in the year 1139. He was summoned by Pope Innocent II to come pick up something or other. I'm not really sure. And he had a vision of all of the future popes to come, in which he quickly recorded those things into cryptic phrases. And
so sort of like a Nostradamus, like quatrain sort of thing?
These were much more specific than the quatrains, actually. They were much more specific than the quatrains. And, you know, of course the church put it down, even though they canonized him and made him a saint. But the church put it down, and they said that, you know, these prophecies were a political move to get, I can't remember who it was, but one of the popes elected by divine providence, things like that. But what we've seen in recent years, and if anybody wants to go take a look at, you know, we don't have time to get into all 112 popes he predicted, but I can tell you that it started with Pope Celestine II, and it has ended with this guy. It has ended with this guy. This would be Pope number 112. He predicted the next 112 popes. And even with play on words type things that he did, it's just really uncanny how close he's been, especially with the last three. I mean, the last three just really blew my mind. You know, just really, really blew my mind how close they were.
So what do you mean by that? So, you know, back in, you know, centuries ago, you know, 1,000 years ago, this guy Malachi prophesied the new popes, and you're saying these last three. What was it that struck you so much about his predictions? I mean, did he predict like the red ruby shoes, or? Okay, that was a bad joke.
Well, okay. Well, here's an example, and since we don't have time to get through, you know, the last three, including this current one.
Yeah. But what struck you the most? You know.
You know, it really hit me because, you know, as all teenagers are kind of sociopaths to some extent, and I really didn't give a shit, to be honest with you. You know, I had always heard about Malachi growing up from my grandparents and had a book at the house and read about it. But, you know, what struck me is when Pope John Paul II died, and it was right before Benedict, Joseph Cardinal Ratzinger was, elected Pope by the conclave. One of the messages for the 110th Pope, which would have been John Paul II, he was called from the labor of the sun, of the eclipse of the sun, or the child of the eclipse. And I remember all this was written in Latin a long, long time ago. To be exact, from 1139 to now, this is an 874-year-old prophecy, if my math is correct. But he was born during an eclipse, and his funeral was held during an eclipse. Now, as far as Pope Benedict, we go into Pope Benedict, he was called the Glory of the Olive, and he chose St. Benedict of Nursia, the founder of the Benedictine Order, and their main symbol is the olive branch, you know, Glory of the Olive. And that brings us to Petrus Romanus, the pope we had now. And, you know, by all accounts, and you had seen this from me on social media and things like that, that he had to either be a national-born Italian or an Italian by ethnicity. Now, being a national-born...
I want to say for folks, too, there was interesting. There were there were sites that I was privy to seeing. There were certain countries, people were actually betting. There were certain odds which pope would be, you know, anointed, you know, from the conclave. I don't know if that anointed is the proper term, but, you know, 100-1 odds and this and this and this. And you were very adamant from the beginning there would be Italian ties to it. But I don't think you were saying that simply just because of the Malachi prophecy. But however you came about that information, I just want to let folks know that, yeah, Evan, you predicted that. And you said it was not going to be someone from Africa, which a lot of people were alluding to.
Yeah, I said it would definitely not be a black pope. It could not be a black pope. One of the main things that I said is, you know, it's easy to get an Italian pope because most of them were Italians, but I specified he would be Italian by ethnicity. And he was born in Buenos Aires, but he was the son of Italian immigrants. And that's really important. That's extremely important. He does fit the mold of being Italian. Now, Tom Horn is an author that is, you know, supposed to be the authority on Petrus Romanus, the final pope, and a lot of other things. And he said, you know, he went on to say that, you know, the only thing needed to fulfill the prophecy was that he needed to be an Italian. Now, I'm sorry, but for me, since most of them are Italian anyways, I needed a little bit more to go on. So I thought, you know, he would either take the name Peter, or he would be, and I didn't really think that he would take the name, you know, Peter as in Peter II, because that's completely off limits. Although Francis did surprise me, because that was something that was supposed to be looked at as taboo also. Or I thought maybe he would be named Peter, but Peter Turkin was black and he was from Africa, he was from Ghana, and so for me that X'd him out completely. So I just sort of figured that he would take the name along the names of Simon Peter, and I was wrong about that. He took Francis, and when they started talking about Francis of Assisi, I thought, you know, maybe it is Francis of Assisi. Maybe it's St. Francis Xavier who helped found his order. But, you know, there's two things that people need to realize here is that Francis of Assisi was born, you know, his birth name it's not even Francesco. His friends called him Francesco. So Francis is not even his birth name. It was actually Giovanni, which means John. Gio is John's. De Pietro de Bernardone, which quite literally means Giovanni of Peter of Rome. But that's not the only thing. I came across something today that a friend of mine on Facebook, Mish, I think you know Mish Farrow, sent to me.
Yeah.
It broke down his last name, the new pope's birth name. And if people don't know that, it's Jorge Bergoglio.
So hold on, Evan. No, we're getting too involved, I think, because so what? So maybe he happened to do. Let's just say this is coincidence, and it's coincidence that all these things are tying in together. Why is it important?
It's not coincidence that he chose Francis. Okay, it cannot be coincidence that he chose Francis because it was a name that was considered off limits because of the great man that Francis of Assisi was to the Catholic Church. It was a name that was considered to be off limits. No one has ever chosen the name Francis to honor Francis of Assisi. I mean,
also maybe he's kind of a new badass pope, you know, like a pope of the people.
And that's what they're trying to portray him as, but. You know, there's two things that point to Peter the Roman, not only in the name that he took, but in his birth last name that she sent to me, and this checks out to be true. If you have to break his last name into two, Berg, that actually means mountain, which in Latin is Petrus, okay? And Oglio is the Oglio River that runs through Lombardo, Italy, and Rome. So, I mean, so many things that play into it. There's so many signs that point to Peter the Roman, Petrus of the river that runs through Rome. The name given to his patron saint that he chose.
With him being the last pope, and when I said that earlier, the Malachi prophecy, from what I understood, and this is off the top of my head, so I can't say it word for word, and you might have that, but that, this week he will be predicted as the last pope, and then it'll be basically Judgment Day. And when I say that, that's the inference that I got from it. But then also, I mean, let's talk about that. Is if he's going to be the last pope, whether all these prophecies just happen to be, you know, all these named coincidences just happen to be complete coincidence, okay? Like I said, I look at things in extremes. I'll give it that. I'm very doubtful. Let's just say it all happens to just be a coincidence. If he's the last pope, does that mean that there will be, that's because there is Judgment Day, like that God comes down and finally, you know, says, I've had enough, and, you know, you guys are cool to go to heaven, you guys are not, and so forth? Or is it because there were many other legal documents and prints and so forth with things that we've discussed before from certain governments, like Project Bluebeam and so forth, where there is an agenda to create a one-world religion? Do you think either one of those is something worthy of discussing as far as if he is the last pope, predicted from the Malachi prophecy, and maybe I inferred that incorrectly from the words of Malachi, or Malachi, excuse me. But that's
I think we have to go to the prophecy and look at exactly what he says about Peter the Roman. It says, in the final persecution of the Holy Roman Church, there will sit the bishop, which the Pope is called the Bishop of Rome, Peter the Roman, who will feed his sheep many tribulations. And when these things are finished, the city of Seven Hills will be destroyed, and the dreadful judge will judge his people, the end. And this is the longest thing that Malachi ever wrote about anybody else.
I just want to make clear, the last word you said from him was the end?
That is what Malachi said, the end.
Yeah. Okay.
The end. It's extremely important to point out that the very purpose of the Jesuit order and the very vows that they take is to guarantee supremacy of the church over the entire world. That's their job. That is exactly what they're supposed to do. And, you know, I just would like to read an excerpt from their vows that they take. And keep in mind that this pope of the people that washes people's feet, he took this very same vow. Okay, now this is, you know, particularly bloody, and this is probably good for adult content, but this is a section of the vow that they have to repeat, that he repeated in 1969 when he became a priest. I furthermore promise and declare that I will, when opportunity present, make and wage relentless war, secretly or openly, against all heretics, Protestants, and liberals, as I am directed to do, to extirpate the extermination from them from the face of the whole earth, and that I will spare neither age, sex, or condition, and that I will hang, waste, boil, flay, strangle, and bury alive these infamous heretics, rip up the stomachs and the wombs of their women, and crush their infants' heads against the walls, in order to annihilate forever their execrable race, that when the same cannot be done openly, I will secretly use the poison cup, the strangulating cord, the steel of the poignard, or the leaden bullet, regardless of the honor, rank, dignity, or authority of the person or persons, whatever may be their condition in life, either public or private, as I at any time may be directed so to do by the agent of the Pope or the superior of the Brotherhood of the Holy Faith of the Society of Jesus, which would be the superior general, the descendant of St. Ignatius Loyola. That's what they call them. If the popes are the descendants of St. Peter, then Jesuits are the descendants of, or the superior generals are descendants of Ignatius Loyola. That is
that's a very serious vow.
That's just part of it, okay? That's just part of it. And I believe there's a list of questions that really plays into part of it too. And this is the very end of their vow, and this is worth listening to also. They ask the initiate, from whither do you come? They answer, the Holy Faith. Whom do you serve? They answer, the Holy Father at Rome, the Pope, and the Roman Catholic Church, universal throughout the world. They ask, who commands you? The successor of St. Ignatius Loyola, the founder of the Society of Jesus, or the soldiers of Jesus Christ. Who received you? And they say, and I have no idea who they're referring to here, Rick, but they say a venerable man in white hair. The next question is, how? They say, with a naked dagger, kneeling upon the cross beneath the banners of the Pope and our sacred order. Did you take the oath? They ask. I did, to destroy heretics and their governments and rulers, and to spare neither age, sex, nor condition, to be as a corpse without any opinion or will of my own, but to implicitly obey my superiors in all things without hesitation of murmuring. The next question is, will you do that? They answer, I will. They ask, how do you travel? In the bark of Peter the fisherman. Whither do you travel? To the four corners of the globe. They ask, for what purpose? To obey the orders of my general and superiors and execute the will of the Pope and faithfully fulfill the condition of my oaths. The final statement, okay, of the person giving these vows is, go ye then into the world and take possession of all lands in the name of the Pope. He who will not accept him as the vicar of Christ and the vice regent on earth, let him be accursed and exterminated. Okay, and this is the first Jesuit pope. I know other people say that we've had other popes, blah, 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 but they're anti-popes. The whole point of this prophecy was to predict popes elected by the conclave, which would be, you know, legally, I guess you could say, legally elected by the conclave, 115 cardinals.
You know, I've got to interject here too, Evan, because, you know, I'm sort of a smartass, but the things you're talking about are very serious, and I've always known too that, you know, the research that I've done with the Vatican alone, besides the Pope, even though the Pope actually, I don't know if people know this, he owns, by law, all shares of everything the Vatican is invested in, which is oil and there's many other things. But anyway, I always, you know, had sort of an aversion to that, especially when, you know, they're against gay marriage, yet he dresses in robes and ruby red slippers and so forth. So I used to make fun of it. But mm-hmm. The things that you're talking, you know, ha, 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 again, a bad joke. But the things you're talking about now are very serious. And I think people should be aware of that. So when, you know, they are bowing down to these entities that, you know, for me, I would suggest for folks to do research on what we're talking about, you know, what you're bringing up with these vows, the Jesuits and so forth, and because it sounds like the worst kind of cult I've ever heard of or come across.
Rick, if anybody doubts how dangerous these people are, all they have to do is look at the child abuse scandals. They were covered up by these people. They were covered up by the Pope, and that Pope was not even a Jesuit. Okay, the Jesuits will do everything they have to do to make to ensure the safety of the Catholic Church. That's their job.
Well, and I know this too. There was actually an HBO documentary on this, and several articles written and so forth. And I wish I had the name. I don't. I didn't know I'd be bringing this up, but where directly from the Pope to the cardinals, you know, and bishops and so forth. You know, when there's these cases of child abuse and sexual, you know, pedophilia, you will be excommunicated. You will lose any credibility. We will come after you. I mean, these are like, you know, sort of a mandate to the lower minions from the Vatican that when you come across
these
things. Oh, you
mean to the regular priesthood?
Exactly. Like, if you come across these things, you do not contact the police. You do not bring this up to your congregation. You bring this directly back to us. And if you do choose to you know, speak out, there will be consequences. So anyway,
right. And they're not even excommunicating them unless it gets drawn into the media. It's not even happening. I mean, they were hiding them and passing them around for years. That's what they were doing.
This is true of the Vatican and the popes, you know, as far as I'm concerned, for many, many years. So I kind of want to bring this back to this pope in particular. What's the difference here? With the Malachi prophecy and so forth, what's the difference with this pope? What's the biggest thing you want to get across to people? Because, you know, he is the people's pope, and I think a lot more people are being suckered into wanting to, you know, people are getting fed up. There's a lot of inequality, not just the United States, but countries around the world now, where there always has been, but that gap is increasing, and people have a lot less approval rating of their governments and even of their own religions and so forth, and churches. And, you know, how churches don't need to pay taxes and so forth. So this would make sense if you want to control people to make him the people's pope. I know I just kind of threw a couple different things at you, but why is this pope so different? Like, my layman point of view, he's just another
thing to me is whenever December the 21st, 2012 was rolling around, I mean, you couldn't turn on TV without seeing a documentary about that prophecy. You couldn't. But
right.
The Malachi prophecies that have been amazingly accurate, you didn't hear anything about it on TV. Nothing. Hardly anybody knew about it. Nothing at all. Especially when he chose Francis of Assisi, and then there's his birth name. And then when you break down his last name, Mountain Petrus, the Oglio, the river that runs through Rome,
interesting that they use the term sheep, too, in that last prophecy for this pope, the sheep.
Yeah.
Because I know that word means something more to me and you than it does to others.
Right.
People that are following, you know, and there's wolves in the mix. But that's what I'm saying. So what can people look for? Are there clues they can look for? What can we notice? What has the pope done so far?
Well, he's broken a lot of tradition. He's broken a ton of tradition. One of the things is he's not taking the same fisherman's ring that all the popes have taken. He's having it modified. He's the very first Jesuit pope. That is huge, that was elected by the conclave. Because there's been a long-running conspiracy theory that the Jesuits actually control the Vatican. Some even say they control the world, but one thing's for sure, that Jesuits are in control of the Vatican now, because there's a Jesuit priest. And, you know, there's always been rumors that they are not supposed to, you know, try and strive for higher office and things like that, but there's hierarchies within the Jesuit order. But none have ever really sought to be pope. Mainstream media called him a nobody, you know, a shot in the dark, a dark horse, but they said it in passing that he actually came in second in voting to Pope Benedict. I mean, this guy was no shot in the dark. He wasn't. And one thing mainstream media continues to overlook too, and they along with this prophecy, they don't even mention it as a form of entertainment, as in, okay, here's a fun fact, blah, 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 let's discredit. They don't even bother trying to discredit and laugh it off, is that, oh, he's the first South American pope. He's Latin. He represents Hispanics. But really, what is he, Rick? He's Italian. Okay?
Well, see,
he's
I'm
Italian.
Glad you brought that up, Evan, too, because, you know, I speak about this a lot. And the reason I do is not for just, you know, kicks. I feel very, very passionate about it. If looking back toward the media, if I was a journalist, okay, CNN, Fox, MSNBC, what have you, whatever, anyone in the mainstream media, and this is the new pope, and of course it comes across their desk about Malachi prophecy and all these things. So even if it's a joke to them, or even if it's not, why is that not being brought up, and why are these things not being discussed? I think that's another reason for people to just kind of sit back and realize, not to just go by the worship that you see on mainstream media. I'm sorry that I kind of interrupted you there, but I think that was a
great
point.
You're okay. And it actually made me think of something you said earlier about homosexuality and men running around in dresses as a joke and things like that. But, you know, I just remember watching CNN when I was trying to wait and see, you know, who would come out. And you had Anderson Cooper there, who was just, you know, he looked happier than a pig in shit. That he was there and that he was going to get to see the new Pope and that things were going to change. And he just was elated that he was there. And, well, you know, a lot of us know about Anderson Cooper. It's a fact that he was affiliated with the CIA. This isn't even, this is not even conspiracy.
He went to Vanderbilt, and you can look it up, CIA connection, yeah, completely.
Yeah, and another fact about him is he's a homosexual. Okay, now why would a homosexual give two shits about who the next pope was going to be? Why would they care? Especially this guy.
Because
who
the old pope
is,
wore the
old
red
school.
Ruby
one. This guy's old school. When he came out, I didn't expect a reformation. What I expected was a military leader. I expected a militant pope. Okay, and this guy has power. I don't care what anybody says. Rothschilds, you know, back during World War II, they took over the banking for the Vatican. Okay, and one of the five heirs, one of the original Rothschild sons from Mayor Rothschild, became Carl. Actually, Carl Rothschild had a great relationship with the Pope and did not even have to bow and kiss his ring. He only had to shake his hand. Okay, the Vatican has been connected to some very, very powerful people for a long, long time. They're very rich. Just the basilica down the block from me has gold flecks in some of the mosaics, real gold. Okay, one of their slabs of marble could feed, you know, all the homeless in St. Louis, Missouri for a night or for a week maybe, you know. And they're adorned in wealth and they're adorned in power. And almost nothing they do is from Scripture. What it is it's an extrapolation of Roman paganism in Scripture, okay, especially how they set up their priesthood and their rules for celibacy and everything else and their rituals. And what we have now is, if anything is significant too, I really want to mention this, is why isn't anybody at least, I mean, they at least talked about the end of the Mayan prophecy, like, okay, we know nothing happened, but my God, at least people prepped and they were prepared for it and blah, 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 and it really changed
even
a lot of mindsets.
Even making fun of it.
Yeah, they made fun of it, but they're not even mentioning the fact that this 874-year-old prophecy, no matter what happens after this, came to an end. No matter what happens, this was an 874-year-old prophecy that came to an end. That was strangely, uniquely accurate. Okay, this is a prophecy unlike any other prophecies you've ever seen, because it was an ongoing prophecy. It was a succession of men. Okay,
and it was very specific. It was very specific to papal means.
Yeah, for a man that wrote these things down quickly, sort of like, okay, I had this vision, I need to get these things down as quickly as possible. He was pretty close, you know. He was very, very
okay, close. Well, Evan. So I need to ask you this too. Then, like, when people ask you, because I'm curious about this as well. So this guy wrote out this prophecy, and it's becoming very evident that he's pretty much spot on. Do you think? What would you say to people that think that people are deliberately fulfilling this prophecy? So it's not like an occurrence. There's a prophecy, people in power, and don't have to.
Well, what I would say is, you know, I would look to the prophecy number one, and I would look to Pope John Paul II number two, him being born during a solar eclipse. That would have to mean that from birth. He was chosen to be Pope. That would have to mean from birth, and Pope John Paul I before him St. Malachi predicted for him of the half moon. And he died, and he was only pope for 1 month, and he died exactly on a half moon. And in the middle
of his... So
again,
this could be coincidence. It seems very doubtful, but going back to, because I know we have different views on this, and I'm sorry, we have just, I think, about 4 minutes left. Do you think that any of this will have to do with the push for a one-world religion?
Oh, I absolutely do. I absolutely do. And you know, as far as, you know, previous discussions, personal discussions you and I have had about the Illuminati's religion, and they do have a religion. I hope nobody is naive to think that they don't, but they do. And one fact I wanted to slip in here is even the Bohemian Grove has a patron saint. And it was St. John of Napalma or something like that. And one of the reason he was a patron saint is he took the confession of the Queen of Bohemia. A king wanted to know what it was. They tortured him. He refused to talk. And they killed him. And so at the Bohemian Grove, there's a big statue of him.
Yeah, so for people that aren't aware of what...
I think the Vatican religion is about as satanic as it gets. It's about as Luciferian as it gets. I really do.
So what people don't understand, that the Bohemian Grove is actually, they have a yearly ritual. It's in California, where heads of state, heads of other countries and so forth, heads of, you know, CEOs of certain corporations will go and meet in secret, and they will have these satanic rituals with an owl statue that's, you know, 50 feet tall and so forth.
Which is a show we need to have in and of its own. But I mean, Catholicism has always been tied into the New World Order. It always has been. It's always been a part of it. The Vatican has had their fingers in money and policy and kings and queens since time immemorial. Okay, that's
everyone
important.
Check out evanbatterton.wordpress.com. You can see me on Scream the News. We're out of time. Evan, thank you so much for being here. A great interview.
Thank you.
And next week, everyone, Evan and I will be tackling GMOs, Monsanto, and some health tips and what we can do to avoid what's coming down with Monsanto. So stay tuned for that.
They are next.
Thank you so much, Evan.
Thank you, Rick. Good having you.